What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Outdoor Edge introduces the all-new Razor Guide Pack. Coming in at 12 ounces and in a premium wax canvas roll pack for compact storage and travel, the Razor Guide Pack is 7 blades in total, including a 5-inch replaceable blade folding knife, a 3-inch replaceable blade caping knife, and the flip and zip saw for wood or bone. Whether you're hunting the back 40 or chasing game deep in the backcountry, the Razor Guide Pack has it all. For more information, visit OutdoorEdge.com.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Mic check, 1, 2, mic check. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast, your number one source for all things hunting gear and equipment, conversations and discussions with random people throughout the North American whitetail, elk, bow hunting period community. I'm sorry, that was the worst intro. I didn't write that down, and so I apologize if you got confused there. But welcome to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we have another really good conversation with another member of the Sportsman's Empire, Mr. Nate Thomas from the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. And I like having Nate on because although we have hunting similarities, we also do a lot of things differently. So we're going to talk today about broadheads. We're going to talk today about the difference between, I have a 30-inch draw. I think he said he has a 27 or 28-inch draw. So he has to shoot a shorter arrow. I have the ability to shoot a longer arrow with a mechanical broadhead. He talks about why he chooses fixed blades. We talk about saddles. We talk about ground blinds. We talk about hang-ons and what scenarios to use those in, or what scenarios we use those in compared to, you know, different times a year, different setups? Is it a pinch point? Is it a rut spot? Is it easy to access? Is it a morning hunt? Is it an afternoon hunt? So we really get into all of these, really good details about, I guess it's really like four or five products today. But it's a good conversation. And I know you guys, if you guys are gear nuts, I know you're going to enjoy it. Do me a favor. Go to iTunes, leave a 5-star review on the Hunting Gear Podcast. Let everybody know that it's a good quality podcast. It's unbiased. A lot of the information comes straight from the manufacturer when we do some of these deep dives into specific manufacturers, hunting gear, hunting product manufacturers. Really looking forward to that. And then what do I want to do? So leave a 5-star review. If you have any questions about products per se, or if you have some kind, any questions, or there's something you want to talk about, hit me up through Instagram. The Nine Finger Chronicles is the best way. Send me a message, say, hey Dan, talk about this, or get this company on the podcast, and I'll do my best to do that. So appreciate all you guys listening and making this podcast pretty popular. And then we do have one commercial today, and that is Code Blue. So Code Blue is a brand new podcast for a brand new partner of the Nine Finger Chronicles and the Hunting Gear Podcast. And if you're not familiar with them, you need to go check out their website. I'm really interested in the mock scrape kits that they have, because this year I've been planning on doing for years now. I've been planning on doing some, setting up some mock scrapes. So I have two main farms. I'd love to get a couple mock scrapes on each farm. They have a very simple kit that allows you to do that. And so I'm looking forward to running a lot of mock scrapes. If you're the scent type of guy, whether that is, you want scent elimination products, or you're looking for the doe and estrus, or you're looking for, buck lures to put in scrapes, that kind of stuff. They have a really, really strict collection process where they collect their urine, and it's one buck or one deer per bottle or bag. And so it's not a mix. They do have synthetics, but the real urine, the real tarsal glands come from one deer per bag. And so that's really interesting, and it just means it's quality controlled. So go check out their website, and I'm going to be able to provide you with a discount code on the next episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I don't have it right now, but I'm going to provide it to you, so stay tuned for that. All right, let's cut to the chase, and let's get into today's Hunting Gear Podcast episode, where we talk about broadheads, tree stands, with my man, Nate Thomas. 3, 2, 1. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we are joined by another brother from the Sportsman's Empire, Mr. Nate Thomas of the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. What's up, man?
Brothers don't shake hands.
Brothers got a hug. Love it. Baseball. We've got to talk a little bit about baseball, because I know your son's in baseball. My son just finished his last regular season game last night, and now we have state this upcoming weekend, and jiminy Christmas. Like, it's just been busy and crazy, and I didn't know that the level of competition at this age group was so cutthroat.
No, I have learned that the era that you and I grew up in is no longer a thing.
It's gone.
I've got a 12-year-old in competitive baseball, and a 15-year-old daughter in competitive softball. And we just got home late Sunday night from Nebraska from softball. Man. And the weekend before that, the 12-year-old boy was down in Springfield, Missouri at state baseball.
Yeah.
And you're just like, dear Lord, it's you're always somewhere. And
yeah,
you almost wonder if it's worth it, but then you watch them, mm-hmm. and you watch, the, I don't know how old your son is doing it, but you watch the camaraderie they grow with these kids that yep. don't go to their, like my daughter, all the teams on her, the girls on her team, not a single one of them go to the same school. Well, few of them do, but not her. She doesn't yeah. go to school with any of these girls. And some of these girls are her best friends, and it's, yeah. that's really cool, I will say. But yeah, when you get home late at night and they're tired and stuff. You're like, man, I just know if it's worth it. But the problem today's world is they can't go play rec ball in their towns anymore if they are a decent ball player.
Yeah.
Because they're just – there's like one team, and some of those kids don't even play baseball before. And it's a weird world, but it's fun overall.
Where are we going wrong in as parents? By so I look at this and I go, hey, I was on one. We had one baseball league. They mixed all the kids up. All the kids played, and then they had an all-star team. So the best kids from all the teams got together, and then they did the traveling and stuff like that. Okay, yeah. So now if you even want to play in high school, or even middle school, or whenever the school teams start, you have got to be on club teams. Like, there's none of this coach pitch stuff anymore. I mean, it's full throttle baseball at this point. And I don't necessarily know if I like that.
Well, I don't know either because I feel bad for, I mean, like you said, if you want to play in high school, you don't have to play club ball all the way to high school.
Yeah.
But you will be so far behind the rest of the kids by the time you get to high school that's why you won't play, because they're that much more developed.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel bad for some of those kids because they're just like, they're just being like you and I were when we were back in school. Like, that's how it was with us. You played on the one team.
Yep.
And then there was an all-star team at the end that you went to, like, maybe like one or two tournaments afterwards. In the same area you lived. And that's how it was.
Yep.
And then you moved on to football. And then you moved on to wrestling and basketball or whatever.
Yep.
And now it's just totally different.
So all these kids are having to specialize in a sport at a younger age when studies show that, and I saw this the other day, studies show that kids who participate in more sports, not just one sport, actually become better athletes in a single sport when they get older. So, I don't know.
Look at all the pros.
Yep.
Like, look at all the pros out there. Almost all of them are multi-sport athletes.
Multi-sport athletes, yep.
That's the one thing we won't let our kids do is pick one.
Right.
You know, even like my son loves football. My other son loves wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
That's great, but you're still going to do the other ones that you like, because we're not doing wrestling, 24/7, 365. We're not going to do softball 24/7, 365.
Right.
You're going to do several sports that you enjoy. Now, if you freaking hate everything else but this one sport, that's a different story. But most kids aren't that way. Most kids, like when I was growing up, my favorite sport was the sport I was playing at that moment.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And then I moved on to the next one, and now that's my favorite sport. So that's why I want them to keep trying different stuff. But it gets harder.
Yeah, that's a fact. And the politics, man. Oh, Jesus, man, the politics. So we're on a school club where there are three kids at, or three teams at my boys' age group. Well, now we're breaking out of that and we're going independent with our own team that he'll be on. And he's not going to be associated with the school anymore, per se. All the kids on the team are going to be from, most of the kids, I should say, two of the kids are not going to be from his school, from his district, but everybody else will be. So we'll still be able to call ourselves by a law part of that school district, but we can't have the same team name as the school district. So I don't know, man. And then you got like moms chirping, like the emails coming into the head coach and shit that he shared with me. I'm just like, what? Like, your kid isn't playing? You know why he's not playing? Because he's not good.
Dude, you want to hear some funny stories, just talk to me off air.
Yeah, I believe it.
I've got some hilarious stories. I mean, my daughter's damn near 16 years old, so like, we've been living this life now in the softball world since, you know, she was playing 8U or whatever. Yeah. And you've seen it all, honestly, once you've
that
life.
Yeah, yep. For sure. Well, let's talk about something I don't want to say more fun, because I love watching my boy play softball. I love watching my girl do her dance stuff and things like that. But a different kind of fun. How about that?
A different kind of fun.
And that's hunting gear and equipment, which is why I called this the Hunting Gear Podcast. But listen, I want to talk about scenarios and what type of, you know, I think what we'll do is we'll just kind of get into it. It's going to be hard for me to explain. And I want to kick it off with mechanical versus fixed blade broadheads. And so I'll kick it off just so you get an idea of what I want to talk about today. But in the past, I have been a mechanical broadhead guy for whitetails, from a tree stand, even from a ground blind, from a saddle. I'm going to be shooting a mechanical broadhead. Most of my shots, my longest shot ever on a whitetail has been 34 yards, I believe it was, 34, 35 yards. And that was in timber. He just happened to step into a gap and I shot him. But outside of that, everything has been inside, inside 25 yards. Thus, I want something. I know that at 25 yards, unless I hit some kind of dense shoulder bone, that mechanical broadhead with my arrow setup, 524 grains, total arrow weight, goes into that animal, it's going to do a lot of damage. And so I'm a fan of fixed blade broadheads when hunting whitetails. Now, when I step outside of that, and you know, you guys go elk hunting every year, I like to then go, because it's a much bigger animal, there is a potential for maybe a longer shot on elk, and I'm going to probably use the same arrow, but I'm going to be using a fixed blade broadhead. And so the reason from that is, if it is a longer shot, it is a bigger animal, that arrow's not going to lose energy when that blade opens. And I'm going to, you know, when I hit it, it's going to go in. And the goal is to get, obviously, two holes. That probably won't happen on an elk, but that's the goal anyway. And so
right.
that's how I lay out my broadhead selection. What do you do?
You already explained it basically, right? Because for me, I'm kind of the exact opposite of you. I just got a new bow this year, so I had a lot of bow tuning done, and I know my exact setup. You're running a 524 grain arrow, I think you said.
Yep.
Mine come in at 416.
Okay.
Because I'm 27 inch draw, so I'm shooting shorter arrows. My arrows are a 300 spine. You might be a 250. I don't know, but so they're a little lighter mm-hmm. per inch. And so I've got a lighter arrow. So this year, now last year I did for whitetail shoot a mechanical.
Okay.
But I'm so damn OCD that I need to try to get everything together. So I'm moving to a good cut on contact fixed blade this year, because I'm going out, like you said, hunting elk in Wyoming. And I'll obviously be hunting whitetail. So I want the broadhead to cut the second it touches the animal and not lose as much energy as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm already at 416 and 253 feet per second. So I'm a slower arrow that's lighter.
Mm-hmm.
You're shooting a heavier arrow that's still probably faster than what I'm shooting, because your draw length is most likely, I've seen you, you're taller than me, you're a bigger dude. It's probably at least 29, 30 inch draw.
Yep.
I'm shooting 27. So there's a lot of like variances between the way your bow setup is and mine.
Yeah.
So I'm all cut on contact, fixed blade all the way.
Yeah.
Moving forward, I think right now.
Yeah. And especially when I did go out on my elk hunts, I was using a fixed blade then. And I stuck because I don't want to have to retune my arrows when I have to put a new broadhead on, right? I'm going to shoot the same head all year for all animals. And so the years that I've gone on these elk hunts, I think it's been four of them, I kept that same head in the whitetail woods. Now, something happened kind of crazy in 2018 when one of my target bucks comes out of this draw And I'm hunting inside of the timber on this field edge. And he pretty much came up to just scent check the field. The wind was kind of blowing into him. And so I just, my wind just quartered. He turned into me before he caught the wind. And I was taking off a rain jacket at the time. So my bow's on the hook. I'm taking off my rain jacket. I set it down. He walks through one of my shooting lanes. I am able to grab my bow pretty quickly, get anchored in, and he was hard quartering away. And I had to kneel down in my stand to take the shot. Well, long story short, I hit him in the ham, okay? But because of that fixed blade, I got a ton of penetration. And I was shooting 508. It wasn't as heavy as the one I'm shooting now. It was like 495 or 500, somewhere right around there. And it hit his ham, went through his ham, went through all of his guts, popped his diaphragm. I think I nicked, or I got liver, and then I nicked a little bit of the lung underneath, a very little bit, which kept him bleeding the whole time. And then the arrow came out of his opposite side shoulder blade. And there's no way I'm getting that type of penetration with a mechanical broadhead. You know what I mean? And I probably would have not recovered that whitetail. I'm almost certain I would have not recovered that whitetail if I did not have a fixed blade on there. So, you know, it's hard to say. Here's why I like mechanicals. For one reason. And it's because, especially in the whitetail world, they do an absolute ton of damage. Ton of damage. Yeah. So that's kind of where...
It's like you want everything. You want damage and penetration.
Yep.
But, and you can get it with mechanicals if you hit the right spot. I mean, obviously, if you hit straight lungs and don't hit anything... outside of bone, you're probably going to pass through and do some major damage.
Yeah.
The way I'm looking at it, just with my setup, and remember, everybody's setup is different.
Yep.
You know, I'm a shorter guy with a lighter arrow that's running slower. So I just want to get as deep into the animal's cavity as I can.
Yep.
Because I'm already hurting myself.
Yep.
So that's the way I look at it. Now, you got other guys like yourself that have heavier arrows that are still probably running faster than mine.
Mm-hmm.
You can afford to put something on there that's going to, you know, poke a giant hole as soon as it starts, you know, opening up, and still might make it further in than me.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of and you know, the fixed blade I'm picking, it's a pretty large blade setup as far as the surface. It's not like I'm poking a little quarter inch hole in there.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of why I've chosen to go fixed blade obviously because of elk. And then I just feel like I want to try to get as much penetration as I can. Now, if you hit them double lung and it doesn't matter what the hell you're shooting, they're going to die.
Yeah.
But obviously shot selection is number one. But then after that, you know, you want to try to play the odds. And in that case, I'm playing the odds. I want to get as deep as I can.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What heads are you using?
They're the most expensive heads I probably could find, but they're iron will solids.
Okay. So they're heavy duty. Are they 150 grain?
No, they're 100s. That's why I'm a little bit lighter.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Those are a pretty well-built broadhead. And so I'm a huge fan of Wasp broadheads.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of it has to do with because it's the first pack of broadheads that I ever shot, and I very rarely lost any deer throughout the years with them. And so I was able to recover my deer, and I was pretty happy with it. But with that said, I have to have this in full disclosure because Wasp definitely. I mean, they pay me. I've had an absolute great relationship with these guys. Their heads are made in America, which is another thing that I really like. Iron Will too, right? Or no?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. So there's two brands made in America. That's awesome. So I know that the durability is going to be there, the material is going to be there, the craftsmanship is going to be there, and that makes it confident for me. But the only thing, and a lot of other broadheads are like this too, in the jackhammers that I use, when I'm inside 30, it's not an issue. But when you're outside of that, you know, you're starting to stretch out to 40, maybe a little bit longer. When the blades open from the top down, right, and they're on that hinge,
yeah.
Like Rage has their slip cams where they start up and they slide down. They don't open up like the Wasp do. I've never seen any type of studies about energy loss on broadheads. You know, they always talk about penetration, but they don't, I think it, obviously energy loss is what leads to a lack of penetration. So the Wasp jackhammers that I use, they do a ton of damage, but I'm pretty sure that there's a good amount of energy loss going into it. I shot my deer in 2020 into the chest. He was right at me. And I put it right in him, and it made it all but five inches into him. But then if I was shooting that same animal with a fixed blade, I'm sure it just would have went all the way through him, right? Right out his ham or something, or his guts or something. So.
And there's some pretty cool, I don't know if you've heard of Sever broadheads, but they're a mechanical broadhead. Yep. I don't know where they're made. I know they're out in Northwest America somewhere, but I shot those. I've never shot an animal with them.
Yep.
So I can't tell you anything with that, but Andy did. Mm-hmm. And what's cool about their broadhead is its deployment. So it deploys from the front, and then it's got some sort of a like a pulley system, not a pulley, a pivot system. Mm-hmm. So like as the blades are going through the animal, if they hit a bone, it pivots so that,
oh yeah. Yep.
It doesn't lose all that energy that it's wasting going through the bone. It basically falls off.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the bone gives way, it pops back up. That's pretty cool. I don't know, you know, what that would do differently than like a brand that stays open and doesn't, you know, matter. But
yeah.
I bought those because there's a guy, he's actually in Iowa, where you are. Lusk Archery Adventures. Okay. I don't know if you've heard of John Lusk.
Yeah, the name sounds familiar.
He tests broadheads. That's what he does. Yeah. He's got a YouTube channel. That's all he does is test broadheads. And that Sever, several years ago, it tested pretty well. And so I bought a few of them. They're not that expensive. But I've, like I said, I've never shot them on an animal. I mean, truth be told, I've never shot a deer with a mechanical broadhead yet.
Okay.
It's always been fixed blade.
Yeah.
I've been hunting with mechanicals, but I've never shot one. So I can't really speak on mechanicals. I mean, those Severs are the first mechanicals I ever bought, and that was 2 years ago. So. Yeah.
That's crazy. I'll say this, man. I shot a doe 1 year with, I mean, it was a 20-yard chip shot, maybe even a little closer. She came out. I drew back. She was a slight quartering away. And I hit her, I went through her front side lung, went through her backside lung, and then I hit her shoulder joint up front. Mm-hmm. And I knocked her flat down, right? And the arrow pinned her to the ground. And so, and then she was struggling to get up, and then she ran, and then she fell over like, you know, 20 yards later. And I don't think I would have got a pass through with a mechanical, but that was with a Boss four blade from Wasp. So that was pretty impressive. And so I don't know. Now here's the question, and it's pretty easy. I think I know the answer for you. It's going to be, if you had to choose between any of them, it would be a fixed blade, right? You're choosing, yeah, a fixed blade. Yeah. I also think that if you had to tell me I can only use one broadhead for all creatures, then I would also choose a fixed blade. But because I have the ability to choose, and I, you know, am going to go hunt whitetails, I'm going to go hunt mule deer relatively close, then I am going to, you know, I would probably pick a fixed blade, but, you know, I'm glad I have the options.
There's so many like fixed blade. Yeah, I would pick those. But then at the same time, if you're a detail oriented person, at least.
Yep.
There's more setup to a fixed blade. You know, I'm very anal about my blades and the arrow it's on. Yeah. So once I find an arrow that a broadhead likes to sit on, when I tune them, I number that arrow and I number that broadhead, and they're together for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
There's a lot more work in the fixed blade with the freaking, the severs or even like the wasp jackhammer, like you were talking about. You can screw that freaking thing on any one of your arrows and go hunt, you know? It's easier, and there's something to be said for that because it's nice.
Yeah,
but I agree. If I had to pick, I'd still go on the fixed side.
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink, then straight to the gym. Pre-K pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Yeah, I agree. All right, now, do you do much hunting out of like box blinds or ground blinds? Zero.
I hate them.
I'm just going to get that out of the way quick because, you know, I've spent my whole life in a tree. Like, all my hunting has been done from a saddle or a tree stand. Right, just recently out of a saddle, but most of the time it's been from a hang-on tree stand, or when I was real young, a ladder stand. I get into a blind and I just feel claustrophobic in a way. I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I need to see more right? And so obviously box blinds and ground blinds have their value, probably for kids, probably for people who have destination food sources or food plots or things like that. But for me, man, I can't, like, I would rather sit on the ground and just be still than be in a ground blind.
You hit the nail on the head. I don't need to say much more, dude. Yeah. I will never myself probably be in a box blind if I'm hunting. Or a blind of any sort. Yeah. Now, like last year, my son Chase killed his first deer out of a blind.
Right.
But that's because I had a little boy with me.
Yeah.
And actually, Andy was with us too, so there's three of us. Those definitely have their place.
Yeah.
And I've got one sitting in my shop right now that still needs to be put together, a tower and a blind.
Yeah.
But when they say it's a blind, it's not just a blind for the animals. It's a blind for the hunter. I hate it.
I
can't smell the woods anymore. Yeah. I can't feel the wind on the back of my neck. I feel like I'm just watching a TV of the woods.
Yeah.
You know, in front of me. And dude, I cannot tell you how many times last year, the year before, that I, you know, had an area I wanted to go to and I just went and sat on the ground.
Yeah.
I would much rather be on the ground out with nature than being a blind. That's just me. I've never liked them, probably never will.
Yeah.
But as the kids hunt, I have used them just because they serve a purpose for that area. But basically, you won't catch me in one if I'm by myself.
Right. Okay. So then I think I heard you once, maybe I'm wrong, maybe it's somebody else. Do you have ladder stands? You use ladder stands?
Oh yeah, for the boys. For
the
sure.
Boys. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Again, perfect for kids. Maybe older hunters. Even like if you're like a rifle hunter, you can get into one fairly easy down a clear cut or a road or something like that. Do you personally have any ladder stands? Let's say in good rut spots or in some of your best spots.
Yeah, I do. I mean, well, I don't think you can see him, but that deer right there, no, it's that one. He was killed out of a ladder stand.
Okay.
What I'll do with them, I actually put five together last 2 weekends ago.
Okay.
I did this whole story about it. It was an entire day of putting double ladder stands. But the only ladder stands I own are doubles. And what I'll do is, if it's in a property that I know I'm going to be at for a while, I will pick areas that I like, and I'll find a good tree that a double ladder stand can go in, and I will hang that tree and I will prepare that area for that stand.
Okay.
Doesn't mean I won't hunt out of another tree near that stand by myself, but it's so that, so when the boys first started going with me, I had a lot of, Daddy, I want to go with you tonight. And I had to go, hey, bud, where I'm going, you can't be with me. Mm-hmm. Because I'm going back here to this hang on, or I've got my stuff on my back. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Well, I really got tired of telling my sons no. So I started setting up these doubles in areas I like to be too, so that if they wanted to go, I could take them.
Yeah.
And we could get in a double together. And once again, I said, I hate blinds. I still hate them even if the boys are with me, if I can help it.
Yeah.
So I'd rather be in a double tree stand than a blind.
Yeah.
So I'll hang them in those areas that I like. And I'm not scared to put them in areas that I would be during the rut or, you know, pushing in. I don't think bothering areas during the summertime really affect the deer that much. If you're in there for a couple hours and you're out of there.
Right.
I honestly make as much noise as I can when I'm setting them up, so that the deer are well aware that I'm in there working.
Yeah.
You know, drive the side by side back there, make sure they know you're there. Then I don't think it really affects them. And so my plan is for those five double stands to go throughout a few of my properties, just so the boys can go with me as much as possible this next year. Right. So yeah, I have no problem hunting out of a double. And then sometimes if I get some information, for instance, the deer behind me that I killed two seasons ago now, I felt like he was going to come from a certain way. And I happened to have this tree stand right on a path because of the way I set it up. And I'm like, man, I don't see how he's not going to scent check and he's not going to use this path. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he wouldn't use it. And he did exactly what I thought he would do. He came straight down the path with his nose to the ground and walked within 20 yards of me and got shot. So,
gotcha.
You know, they serve their purpose, and I'll probably always use double ladder stands somehow for at least the next 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. I mean, and eventually at some point I'm going to get my kids in the tree with me too. And I'm going to, I'm going to have something like that. Right. The issue is like ground blind versus double ladder stand. Like, especially if it's a young kid, I definitely think ground blinds have their place, because really if you're hunting out of a ground blind with a kid, then I feel through managed expectations that I would understand that, you know, it's not necessarily going to go down tonight. You know what I mean? Like if I'm out there hunting, I'm the hunter and I bring in my kid with me, I'm probably just doing it to be convenient for them. You know, probably, I don't know. I'm not going after the big buck. You know what I mean? Like I would, right. You know, from a strategy standpoint. So I don't know.
And as time goes on, like I've learned a lot since I started taking my sons. Like my son Caden, first time I ever took him hunting with me, I went out and set up two hang on stands perpendicular to each other in a tree.
Yeah.
And what I did was I was like, well, what I'll do is I'll have him in front of me and then I'll have him get into the stand on the south side. And then I'll sit on the one facing west.
Yep.
And he'll be right next to me. It'll be great. Well, I didn't think of the fact that he was fucking terrified climbing that tree
In the dark.
No, it was an evening sit. So we were going in. But, you know, you're talking about tree sticks instead of a ladder. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for a kid, I can see where it would be much more scary than climbing a ladder.
Right.
Where you can just go up just like a ladder.
Right.
And I remember that night vividly. Like, I don't remember a lot about my life, but that I remember because, like, I'm sitting there and I'm like, am I going to make him finish this climb or are we going to not hunt tonight?
Right.
And, you know, I was a dick and I was like, no, you're almost there. Mm-hmm. Get your ass up the tree. You can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when he got up there after he got set down, then he had the time of his life.
Right.
And then we had to climb down in the dark and he was scared again. But so like, I mean, I will set up a double setup again because now he's been hunting with me for several years and he's not scared of it anymore. But I just want to try to make it easy on him.
Right.
Because at the same time, they're still 10 years old, you know, 10, 11 years old. They're still kids and they're not us.
Yeah.
So I don't want to like scar them and, you know, have some shit happen or something like that.
Right.
So,
right.
you know, that's where the ladder stand is, just really, really nice.
Perfect. And so I heard you mention that you are going to be messing around with a saddle this year. Why?
So I got a new property to me, and I just got it like 2.5 weeks ago.
Okay.
So scouting is not really much of an option this year. I mean, you can go walking through the woods, but seeing their travel corridors are a lot harder in the middle of the summer than they are in the wintertime. And I don't really want to go blowing through there that often right now, as much as I can help it. And so I got a new property. So I have done a little bit. I put some mineral out where I could, and I've got some cameras out, obviously. Mm-hmm. And as I'm in there doing that stuff, I'm just really paying attention. And this is funny to say, but the two other farms that I hunt, those farms suck for trees.
Okay.
You know, they've got like one of them is just nothing but hedge trees. And, you know, like getting a double ladder stand into some of those has been the big, I mean, it's like you're just spending half your time with a chainsaw.
Right.
So this place, though, I've noticed has a lot of straight trees with not a lot of understory.
Mm-hmm.
Well, some understory, obviously, but straight trees. And I'm just like, I could be in that one. I could be in that one. I could be in that one. And I just thought, dude, I don't know this property. It's probably going to take me this year to learn this property as I'm hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And that just brought me back to one thing, saddle.
Yeah.
You know, my run and gun setup that I had before with a tree stand, it's fine, but it's heavy as shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like carrying it in.
What were you using?
I like the stand, but it's an XOP Vanish.
Yep.
And then I've got the tree stand transport system on it.
Yep.
And then at the time I'm using Hawk Helium sticks with daisy chains instead of the buckles. But every time I would go in and hunt with it, and I haven't done that in a couple of years now, I would feel like I was packing an elk in, right? Like it was heavy, you know, like, well, what I would do is I would have the tree stand on my back and I would fold the seat down. And then I would place my backpack on that seat and I would strap everything together.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I probably had more stuff in my backpack than I needed to have, but it wasn't fun for me.
Right.
I wasn't enjoying going in like that. It was just too heavy.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, you know, if I'm going to be doing this run and gun stuff at this new property where I need to see new stuff and new spots, and, you know, I might see a buck 80 yards away one night and I need to make a move two nights later. It's a saddle. I mean, there's so many companies now that make good stuff, and you've heard enough good things about them that it was a pretty easy decision to make.
The world moves fast. Your workday, even faster. Pitching products, drafting reports, analyzing data. Microsoft 365 Copilot is your AI assistant for work. Built into Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and other Microsoft 365 apps you use. Helping you quickly write, analyze, create, and summarize. So you can cut through clutter and clear a path to your best work. Learn more at Microsoft.com/N365Copilot.
So,
yeah.
I got one.
Yeah, I got a new one too this year. It's called the Lockdown from Tethered. And the thing that I really, really, really like about it is it's got two, like, pockets. They're not pockets, but there's little packages, little containers that you can unzip and put stuff in. And so I'm the kind of guy who likes to, whenever I do a run and gun, everything is in my pockets or in my, like, my hoodie. And so I'll be able to easily pull out a bow rope or pull out a screw-in step or something like that. So I have the other saddle as well, the XL or whatever. I forget the name of it right now. But anyway, so that one worked great, but I felt like I was still having to dig in, you know, I was digging in my pockets you know, trying to get my backpack off and things like that. This one, everything's going to be right on my hip. And so it's going to be easy to set up. And then by the time I'm up the tree, the only thing I have to do is hang my backpack up, pull my bow up, hang it, and I'm set. I'm good, right? I'm good to go. So,
yeah, I'm pretty excited. I mean, like I said, I all I have is the saddle and the platform right now. I still got to get my sticks and whatever else I need. But So I haven't like tried it yet and played with it. So I'm obviously I've got to practice because it's different than a tree stand. But dude, the platform, I got the larger platform. All my stuff, it's a trophy line set up. And so I got the mission platform, I think it's called. And it's bigger, but it's bigger than the small one, but it's like nothing, dude. You can just sit there and like hold it in your, the palm of your hand almost. So I'm excited. I'm just excited about that. And then you're going to be wearing the saddle into the woods. So I haven't decided what sticks I'm going to go with yet. Obviously Trophy Line has a setup that I might go with, but, I've heard a lot of good shit about those tethered one sticks. Just so how light they are. And they're pretty stuff light. Like that. So
They're pretty light. Hang-ons, like I still feel like tree stands definitely have their place. And I, the reason I like, I'm still mobile, but I feel like I'm going to have across all of my properties, I'm going to have four total. That's like 600 some acres of only four preset tree stands. The rest is going to be bouncing around on a saddle. And obviously all of my out-of-state hunts will be from a saddle. But I feel like hang-ons definitely have their place, especially in like a morning hunt, right? I don't care who you are, setting up, going mobile in the pitch black dark sucks a little bit, right? You can't see your, you know, obviously you got your headlamp on. You want to be as quiet and less intrusive as possible, but there, you know, even if you got a saddle, even if you think you're a pro at setting up, there's still a little bit of intrusion versus walking to a preset tree stand and climbing straight up it and snapping in.
No doubt. And that property I'm telling you about, I'm probably going to set up a few of them.
Yeah.
Because I've got a few and I've picked what I think is a good spot.
Yep.
I love hang on still. And from a run and gun standpoint, I mean, you used to and still probably will at some point. That's all you did was run and gun with a hang on. The issue I had was my setup probably just wasn't the best, right?
Right.
You know, like my XOP, just a little heavier than a lone wolf, a little heavier than maybe a few others. The hawk sticks that I had, a little heavier than the rest.
Yeah.
The way I took it in, probably put way too much shit in my backpack.
Yeah.
You know, compared to what I needed to have in there. It could have been easier.
Right.
But, you know, there's definitely a place for that. But the way I looked at it for this next year is if I'm going to run and gun one way or the other, I'm going to go as light as I can because then I'll do it.
Yeah.
If it's heavy and I don't want to do it, I'm not going to.
Right.
So I'm going to go as light as I can. And that's obviously going to be a saddle.
Yeah.
So
the thing that I need to figure out is I'm the guy who goes to my tree stand in just a, like I take off layers and add layers throughout an entire hunt, right? By the time I get to a tree, I'm usually soaking wet with sweat.
Yeah.
You know, unless I just wear a base layer and pull the, what I call the freeze method, where I'm just so cold. But by the time I climb up the tree, I start to warm up and then I start throwing layers on. And if I time it right, I can do it. But most of the time I'm wet, I'm sweaty. And then, you know, that the base layer is there. The issue that I'm like with a saddle is just like the layering part of it, right? What I got to try to figure out is how I'm going to layer my clothes, in a saddle.
I hadn't thought of that yet.
Yep.
Yeah. That'll be weird. Cause I'm the same way. I get hot easy. So
yeah, most of my saddle hunts have been in just throw a jacket on. Right. I was able to stand up on the platform, put my jacket on, and then I was good. But we're not talking about bib overalls. We're not talking. And I think the way most of the bib overalls, they snap, unsnap down a little bit. So I might be able to tuck the front part of the saddle up into it, buckle up, and then and then button it up close with just the ropes hanging out of the overalls.
Yeah, because isn't that, I mean, obviously people just heard I just got one, so I haven't hunted out of one yet. But one of the things that people, I guess, complain about, quote unquote, is, you know, like their jackets riding up on them and exposing their back or whatever. So, like, a lot of people talk about hunting out of bibs because it's nice. Then you don't have that problem. I've never been a bib wearer. I've got a few, and I might wear them, but that's a good point. I never really thought of that because – you know, my thought was I was going to put the saddle on at the truck and then go in.
Yep.
But, or do you wait until you get to the base of the tree and then make sure you put on what you need to put on for that hunt?
Yeah.
Before that.
Right.
I guess I'll have to figure that out as I'm hunting.
Yeah, for sure. That's just one more thing you got to think about when, you know, trying new equipment. But, you know, the more I've watched saddle hunting, I used to think that there was a lot of movement in saddle hunting, right? Where, you know, if you're in a tree stand, you're just sitting there, you can turn your head and look, maybe you can stand up and turn around. But I feel like if I set my saddle up right, and I messed around with this a lot, it's almost more of a natural movement to swing. It's not, I don't know. I feel like it's more like a tree branch would move than it would be standing up straight, turning around in a stand. You know, I haven't gotten busted in a saddle yet. I haven't killed a deer out of a saddle either, but I haven't gotten busted yet either. So, and I had some pretty close encounters with a doe, a doe group this year. And so I'm looking forward to expanding my knowledge base of saddle hunting.
That's a perfect way to put it. I'm looking forward to, well, here's what I'm looking forward to. I'm looking forward to cussing at the freaking thing and saying, this is stupid, because that I guarantee you the first time I go to use it, that's what I'm going to do.
That's funny.
And then I'll be like, I'll probably call Mike and be like, nah, screw this. I'm not hunting out of this anymore, blah, blah, blah. And then by the third time, I'm going to just be like, this is the best thing ever. Yeah. Yep. Anything I ever do, that's how it goes.
Yeah. You know? So you'll bitch about the saddle not being right, but then you'll go back to the tree stand. Then you'll bitch about it being too heavy. Right. Yep. Yep. So yeah, I'm the same.
So I'm looking forward to being super agitated for the first couple like weeks of my hunting season.
Yeah.
Out of a saddle, and it's not the saddle's fault, and it's not going to be anybody's fault but my own, because stuff always comes up that you don't think about.
Right.
You know, like we just talked about the clothing thing. You know, something's going to come up that I'm like, oh man, I really wish there was something I had right here for my bag to pull up.
Yeah.
Or why the hell am I going back down the tree? I need to have this. And I'll be aggravated that entire hunt because I didn't think of that before.
Yep.
And then eventually I'll work all my kinks out and then I'll be happier in hell. But I know it's coming. It always does.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Let's see here. Do you ever wear rubber boots?
Never.
Neither do I. I was going to, you know, I feel like rubber boots maybe have their place on a warmer weather, really wet scenario. I know a lot of guys in the South pretty much, you know, if they're hunting swamps, you have to have rubber boots. But for me, there's always some kind of high ground to walk on. Unless I had to cross a creek that I couldn't jump over or do a quick splash into, I'm not wearing rubber boots. But I think that's it, man. That's all I really, those two things are really what I wanted to cover today in those types of scenarios. Saddle versus hang on. Really, we were talking about scenarios. Ground blinds, great for food plot hunting, great for rifle hunting, longer distances, maybe kids, that kind of stuff. Hang-ons, there's a lot of overlap, in my opinion, between hang-ons and saddles, especially when I feel like, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I feel like with my saddle, I had to trim a little bit more compared to getting a tree stand in. And the reason I say that is because when you're on, you know, you're facing the tree. So then you have to, you know, you got to shoot. Sometimes you're shooting towards the tree. And I felt like I had, like when I was doing my running guns with saddle hunting, I had to trim a little bit more around my body level than I did with, and maybe it's because with a saddle, you have more shot opportunity on the backside of the tree than you with a stand. Right. So maybe that's what I was trying to get at.
I think, and also hang-ons are like super versatile. Like if you think about it, there's hang-ons that are little as hell that you can run and gun with. There's big ass hang-ons. So honestly, hang-ons almost can be like a ladder stand.
Yep.
In some instances where you can do what I was talking about, where you have two in one tree and you take a kid in it.
Yeah.
You can have a small hang-on where you're running and gunning. You can have larger hang-ons that you preset, which is basically a ladder stand, but it's not.
Yeah.
You know? And so, I will always have hang-ons. I will have a lot of preset setups because I like to do that.
Yeah.
So they're super versatile. I definitely will always use those. Just because I'm using a saddle this year does not mean I won't be out of hang-ons maybe as much. And honestly, we didn't even talk about this, but there is one type of hunting that has intrigued me more and more and more, and I've done more and more of it, and that's hunting off the ground.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So, I mean, because all the stuff we just talked about, that can all go away when you're off the ground.
Yeah.
And you're now, obviously, there's negatives to hunting off the ground, and I definitely understand those negatives. Every time I'm ever on the ground, I think to myself, boy, it'd be nice to be 10 feet up in the air right now.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
But, man, I'm telling you, it's just so free.
Yeah.
It's just such a free feeling that there's another option for people. If you don't have the money to go buy a saddle, you don't have the money to buy a few hang-ons and hang them or some ladder stands, just go sit at the base of a tree and stay still.
Yeah.
Play the wind the same way.
Yep.
You need to worry about your wind a little more on the ground for sure, because now you're right there.
Right.
But, dude, I know a buddy of one of our partners. He's a habitat guy. He is a straight up killer, and he does not hunt out of anything but his own 2 feet.
Yeah.
So, there's lots of people up.
Yeah, my dumbass is messing that up somehow. I'm too big to be stealthy.
You are a large man.
I was not born to be quiet. So, like, I'm not a cheetah. I'm a rhinoceros. So
you are a large individual. That's where I kind of have an advantage, Eric, because I can kind of get into areas that you have to just basically stand out there like a Sasquatch.
You're a timber ninja, and I'm a I'm just like a truck going through the field. So yeah. Well, hey man, I really appreciate you doing this last minute. Thank you very much for hopping on. If you guys haven't checked out the Missouri Woods and Water podcast, it's great. If you live in Missouri, it's also great because they cover a lot of nationwide issues as well. So go check out Nate and the rest of the Missouri Woods and Water crew. Other than that, Nate, man, thank you and good luck with the rest of your summer.
Thanks, buddy. Shoot your bow, folks.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever?
Cabin crew,
sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.